cars that tell parents when their kids are speeding, what we learn from drunk tweets, and warning, hackers are tricky. All that and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1471, recorded Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by ScoreBig. Pay less for quality seats to your favorite sporting and music events. Go to scorebig.com, click on the microphone, and enter promo code TNT to save $20 off your first ticket purchase.
And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/TNT to apply for a loan now. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/TNT and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we do a rundown of all the important technology news with people who like to talk about technology news, and with you who like to listen. I'm Megan Maroney.
I hope you like to listen. I'm Jason Howell. Maybe sometimes you like to watch, too, because we do it in video and audio. Mm-hmm. It's true. We do it for you guys.
We do.
Welcoming to the show, Roberto Baldwin from Engadget. How's it going, Roberto?
I'm still laughing at you like to watch.
We say some funny things that we try not to laugh at on the show.
Yeah. Good. So what are you working on these days? We see a lot of things with wheels over at Engadget with your name attached to them.
Yeah, I'm covering a lot of transportation, smarter cars, maybe not smart cars, electric vehicles, electric motorcycles, doing some security stuff, a little bit of IoT, just throw that in there, a little IoT for funsies. No one has fun with IoT. I'm kidding.
Now, have you tested the Apple Car?
Yeah, like 3 times.
Okay. No big deal. They gave you one. They were like, here, you tested it. We feel like we should give you one of these. Just don't tell anyone.
I signed something. It said NBA. I don't know what that
means. Yeah, it had something to do with basketball. Yeah,
I don't.
Whatever.
So Apple Car. It's got a click wheel. It's weird.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Well, we'll be sure to spread that rumor. Let's get to the stories. Mark Bergen over at Recode has the scoop on a new Apple Watch band that's designed for people with heart issues. It will monitor your heart and send results directly to your doctor if there's a problem. Now, the big news here is that unlike many other wearables, this one has been approved by the FDA, which is really interesting. I mean, this is not just a heart monitor. This is a heart monitor for people that have issues like an electrocardiogram. It's called AliveCor, and it's created by a former Googler, Vic Gundotra. What do you guys think?
My sister's had a heart problem since birth. Not a problem, an issue. And, you know, that's this sort of technology. This is what, like, the health technology should be doing, as opposed to, you know, kind of telling you how well you're doing in your spin class. I think there's a, the health field and the tech field coming together for something that's actually genuinely useful is promising that other things will come down the pike.
Absolutely.
Plus FDA approval. Good job.
Yeah, no kidding. Gundotra actually believes this is would be the first FDA cleared smartwatch accessory. But we're kind of seeing a little bit of this kind of, you know, stuff merging in from names like Google and stuff. I remember the Google smart contact lenses that we heard about, I think it was last year, that would, you know, be used for sensing glucose levels and stuff like that. So there's definitely it's ripe for the picking as far as the devices that we use and that we wear every day, for that to actually provide something, like you said, more useful than just, you know, I'll check my heart rate while I'm at the gym. This, you know, if it's FDA cleared, that means this is serious business and could actually, you know, do things like, you know, save lives and protect people.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that activity trackers have their place. I mean, they do encourage people to be healthier across the board, which
That's true.
Is good. I mean, they're not all. They also can encourage people to be too obsessive about their health or tracking, you know, themselves. And they certainly, there have been studies that say they, you know, are additional factors leading to people's eating disorders because you're being obsessive about it. So, yeah, there it's a double-edged sword. But I think it's really interesting because I think they haven't really gone into this health realm because it's harder. It's harder to get right. FDA approval. It's easier to just say, well, we might be tracking your heart rate sometimes, and it might give you a number that might be helpful to you.
That explains actually why the heart rate monitors on smartwatches, I mean, I can only speak for Android Wear anyways, aren't always the greatest things in the world. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, well, we put it in there as a feature, you know, as a tick on the feature list. But really, I mean, I don't know. I forget that it's even there. To be honest, I hardly ever use it, but mm-hmm. I know that some people do.
And your fun fact of the day, it says it was an ECG and not an EKG. And mm-hmm. I watch a lot of ER. So I was wondering what the difference. They're the same thing. It's okay. Just that electrocardiography with a K mm-hmm. was translated. That's the German. So if you learn nothing else on this show, EKG and ECG, same thing.
But Gandotra actually has a pretty good team working with him. A couple of the guys he's pulled over from Google worked on, you know, Google Glass. You know, some people might interpret that as a good or a bad thing. But Google Glass and then, you know, eventually Project Aura, which is kind of like the enterprise edition arm of Glass. So, yeah, he's got a good team around him to do this. Very interested to see where it goes. Ryan Collins, one of the hackers behind the nude photo theft that surfaced a number of private celebrity photos to the internet, pleaded guilty, has been charged with felony computer hacking. Now, at the time, just last year, the rumor had it that Apple's iCloud service was weak, kind of paving the way for an easy exploit. But it turns out the hack didn't involve much more than a simple phishing attack. Collins would send emails to the victims, of which, you know, he was able to access more than 120 different accounts between Gmail and iCloud accounts. Basically, he'd send him an email, you know, proposing that he is from one of those official sites and asking for login credentials. And hey, what do you know? Social engineering works. And so he got a lot of IDs and was able to gather, well, as we know, a lot of very private information, private pictures, all that kind of stuff. He's not actually being charged with sharing the images, though, which is kind of interesting. They couldn't find any specific proof that he actually shared it, but they do know. And he's basically said, yes, I did commit these crimes and, you know, hacked into all those accounts. So
that is the interesting part, that neither he nor anyone else is being charged so far for sharing them, spreading them, looking at them, all the other things that were involved in this case beyond just asking someone, like, you know, pretending to be Apple and trying to get the mm-hmm. password. So I don't know if that's the next thing. It'd be hard. It would be very difficult to track all the people that shared and looked at the photos. But yeah, it's an interesting case. I think you said it was last year. It was 2 years ago, 2014. And we're still talking about it. And that story about it being an iCloud vulnerability, like, that's still stuck around. Like, I definitely thought that was the case. I mean, it's surprising that it's just a phishing attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people talk about it as a brute force attack. They just brute force their passwords. You know, and that seemed, you know, for the amount of people, I mean, that seemed maybe they could have done that. But, you know, the phishing is so simple. And it's a good reminder to everybody, never click on a link on an email. If I get an email from Apple or from Google or from Amazon or whatever, I never click on the link. I always just go to the site and type it in by hand. And then if they have a message for me, I can find it from, you know, somewhere on the site. But yeah, just to be safe, just don't click on links and emails. Actually, just don't have email. That's awesome.
I like that.
That's
even
a great
better
solution.
Yeah. Email's
the
horrible.
Scorched earth plan. Kashmir Hale also wrote about this. I love her take on it. She says celebrities need better security advisors, and that everyone should turn on 2-factor authentication so that if you do get your password stolen, you have, you know, to also have a device there to actually get those pictures stolen or whatever else you're trying to protect.
No matter what, if you tell someone your password, bad things might happen. So just don't tell people your password, you know, like Roberto said, go to mm-hmm. the site. If there's a really important information, you know, piece of information there that you have to actively do, I'm guessing it would in most cases be relatively easy to find the place on the site to where you could find the answer to that. Because yeah, I mean, even when I'm like pretty much 100% sure, I still feel weird about clicking those links in the emails because mm-hmm. you just never know. Like, hackers are tricky in mm-hmm. that regard. So you just never know.
They are. Hackers are tricky. Well, the funding apocalypse continues.
Understatement of the millennium. Yeah.
Hackers are tricky.
Hackers are tricky. DC-based local deals coupon website Living Social has raised $900 million and was once worth $4.5 billion. But in a blog post on their site, the company says they're laying off half of their workforce and they've changed focus to a few new products. One of those products is Restaurant Plus, a card-linked solution that will let you earn cash for dining out. Now, this is interesting to me. I don't, you know, we've heard a lot of companies losing funding or, you know, going under. I'm wondering if this sort of daily deals kind of coupon site was really a product of the recession. And now that that is, you know, we've sort of moved away from that. If that's why these sites are no longer popular. Groupon also not doing so great right now.
No. I mean, all sites kind of this same business model have transformed and changed what they do over the last couple of years because it just has not been working out so hot. I feel like every year I feel like I hear about, you know, sites like this just kind of laying off more people. Mm-hmm. Actually, 120 of the jobs that were that they're getting rid of are actually going to be outsourced. So they have that going for them. But yeah, it's a really good question. Like, why does a business like this, why do businesses like Living Social have such a hard time, you know, over the years kind of sustaining? Because, man, it was so hot at one point. What do you think, Roberto?
And, you know, I think we all were excited about the idea of saving money. We're like, yeah, we're going to save money.
Right.
We all got some Groupons. And then we didn't use the Groupons. Like, how many Groupons did you buy that you never used? I bought one for, like, stand-up paddleboarding I never used. I'm still mad about that. And it's not like a regular coupon you get in the mail where you're like, well, if I use it, I don't use it, no big deal. I gave them money.
Yeah.
So somebody somewhere, Groupon and this stand-up paddleboarding place, have my money, and I never used it. And so I think a lot of people – they were using, you know, it was kind of a hot fad. It was like Elo, you know, it was like cool for like, you know, a hot second. And then we realized like, oh, well, it's not really that great of a deal if I'm not using it. And so people, you know, stopped using it. They stopped opening the apps and, you know, other apps came in and they just keep getting moved off the home screen. And then eventually they're teaming up with restaurants for some other weird thing that no one will use.
It's part of the reason why businesses like selling gift cards, because so many people buy gift cards for somebody else and then the gift card either gets lost or they forget about it or they wonder every time they look at it if it even has a balance on it, so they never do anything about it. And that's just money in their pocket. I will say, if you still have your stand-up paddleboard thing, I mean, you're here, as far as I know, at least in California. I don't know about outside of California, but you still have value on that based on the amount of money you spent on it, not the amount of money like the extra deal that they were offering. But if you paid $25 for it, you still have that value. I know that. So there's something, I guess.
Well, you just made my weekend plan. So done.
Like that paddleboarding coupon was like 5 years ago. I don't know if I still have it anymore.
I get like a 30-minute session instead of 4 hours. I don't care. I don't care. I'm stand-up paddle boarding.
Yes.
It is one of those examples where it's a crazy amount of money for this company to have. And I think Amazon might own part of them as well. But it did take advantage of the technology, which was, I guess, relatively new at the time. It's crowdsourcing, you know. I mean, having all these people be able to, you know, buy a coupon made it a Groupon and made, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was maybe one of the earliest crowdsourcing technologies. But
another
now we're done with
example.
It.
Yeah. There you go. We'll tear up that Groupon.
Womp.
Throw it in the trash. Twitter updated its Universal Windows app today, bringing support for full-size desktops all the way down to Windows 10 mobile phones with a single app. That's thanks to the Universal Windows platform. Twitter found in doing this that 90% of all the user, you know, user interface, interaction, all that kind of stuff could actually be shared between the device configurations. I think this is one of the bigger kind of examples, you know, of a major, you know, product like Twitter doing this kind of unified thing. Some optimizations were needed, of course, between them and bringing in features that, I don't know, it's kind of funny reading. I mean, unfortunate reading the feature list and going, oh, you're getting those now. Moments, camera support. Quote tweets, group direct messages. I mean, all things that are just kind of core to the Twitter experience. But supposedly, I don't know. It kind of feels bad saying this out loud now. Like I'm talking down to the Windows platform. I am not, but I'm very happy that you have these features now. So there you go.
Windows Mobile 10 phone OS, whatever. Any apps they can get are good. Right. The question is when is Twitter going to update this? It was just sort of like, hey, you know, we'll make this one thing for you guys. It's good for Microsoft. It's good for Twitter. But if 1,200 people are using that Twitter app in a year, I doubt it is going to be updated. And that's sort of the problem with Windows Mobile. I remember Instagram might still be Instagram beta on the Windows phone. So that's sad. And I've used Windows Phone a bunch of times, and it's not horrible. It's just that you can't get any apps for it, and there's no apps. And you look at your friends who are using Android and iPhone. I mean, what's the point?
I mean, I remember this. Like, I'm always, because I'm an Android user and I've used Android since, you know, back in the Droid days, you know, for years at this point. And it always reminds me when I'm kind of watching the development of Windows Mobile Windows 10 Mobile. And it just reminds me of when I had first started out on Android and iOS had all of the big name apps. And I was just always longing. And even like a third party, not very good, but better than nothing app would come along and you'd get really excited about it because it was something, you know? And I kind of feel in some ways that it's probably at least a little bit like that on the Windows platform. But I mean, you know, this is good news. Also, I think kind of buried in here is just the fact that supposedly Windows 10 Mobile, it has been anticipated as an upgrade for devices for months now. Supposedly that update and announcement is going to happen tomorrow, but I guess we don't know for sure. So this might actually be timed with that. This might be a totally purposeful release today because of that.
So that way you can't say there's no apps because they can say
you have Twitter.
They can tweet that they got it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
If we get Twitter out, they can tweet that they got it. Boom.
There we go.
Right.
There exactly. We go. All right, coming up, we have a small collection of automotive stories to chat with Roberto about. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. That is Score Big. What is the next big event that you want to attend? Maybe it's a musical. Maybe you want to go to Wicked or a Foo Fighters concert. Maybe a local baseball game, or maybe you want to bring the entire family to something like Frozen on Ice. I know which ones I'm going to. I'm going to Underworld next month. I'm going to the National. Can't wait for that. And thanks to tickets I found on Score Big, Tame Impala, later this year. Don't blame Score Big for my own taste in music. Check it out for yourself and find the music that speaks to you. Whatever it happens to be, you can bet that there's a way to pay less for better seats. How? You just go to scorebig.com. 40% of all live event tickets go unsold. Score Big is making it easy to go to live events by working directly with your favorite teams, your favorite artists, to get their unsold seats at unpublished prices. Now, at scorebig.com, you're always guaranteed savings by paying much less than what the box office charges for tickets. They have awesome deals on tickets to concerts, sport games, Broadway productions, family-friendly events, the whole nine yards. To take advantage of these deals, you want to visit scorebig.com. You'll find the event and the seats that you want. Then you can make an offer with ScoreBig's name a ticket price feature. You'll receive an answer from ScoreBig instantly, and you can save up to 60% on your tickets. You also have an option to pay a fixed price, which is much less expensive than major online ticket resellers. Now, with ScoreBig, there are no surprise fees. You get free shipping. You can even favorite shows as well as events to be notified on the upcoming dates to attend. So maybe it's not available yet. You go ahead and favorite it. When it is available or, you know, it's happening, you'll be notified, and that's awesome. Very convenient. Now, quit overpaying for tickets. Get the tickets you want at prices you can afford with ScoreBig. The next time you're planning to attend a game or show, just visit ScoreBig first, and you can see how much you can save. Go to scorebig.com, click on the microphone, and enter promo code TNT to save an extra $20 off your first ticket purchase. That's scorebig.com, promo code TNT. Thanks so much to ScoreBig for sponsoring this episode.
Roberto, are you a fan of the Tame Impala?
I love Tame Impala. I'm not kidding.
They are fantastic. I'm a big fan.
They are fantastic.
I can't wait. Greek Theater.
I was excited.
That's really nice.
Because I thought it was actual Impalas.
No. It's not. Different.
And they're tame. You can, like, it's like a petting zoo.
Yeah.
What a nice little Impala.
It's neither.
So well behaved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither the animal nor the car.
No, just good music.
But let's talk about cars. The Chevy Malibu was cool in the 70s, and now they're trying to be cool again to people who grew up in the 70s who might now be the parents of teenage drivers. Tell us about the new features in the Malibu, Roberto.
So the Malibu has a lot of the features you'll find in the Volt and a lot of other. They have that same infotainment system in the middle. But what's nice, and you know, it's like I said, and it's not the muscle car of the late 60s, early 70s, which is kind of disappointing for, you know, people who like to go really fast. But most people, you know, you're not going fast anymore anyway. You're stuck in traffic. But for families who kind of still want that Chevy name, the Malibu is out there, and it has this cool thing that'll keep your kids. Maybe not keep them, but it'll dissuade them from speeding. It'll dissuade them, you know, it'll remind them to put their seatbelts on. And then once they, you know, they take the car out and they come back, it has a report card. Now, this is the best part, is the report card, because it tells the parent, okay, you know, little Timmy went, you know, over 70 miles an hour 7 times. And he, you know, there's the speed warnings. You know, he had front collision alerts, which means you're following too closely. When he slammed on the brakes a couple times, stability control when he was trying to, you know, do donuts in the parking lot at the local Jack in the Box. It gives you all that sort of information, so you can have, you know, a conversation with your kid about their driving, or at least, you know, stop them from taking the car on Friday. If you're like, hey, if you're going to drive like an idiot, we're not going to let you have the car. Which, as a teenager, I drove like an idiot and wrecked my parents' car and continued to drive like an idiot. Now I write about cars. So,
wow.
That's not a good lesson for people.
No, I mean, I had to go to court, and the police had to like escort me home, and it was.
You needed a report card is what you needed.
Yeah, I did. Before that wreck, I needed a report card to remind me. And to show my parents, to be like, you know what, you're going around corners probably a little too quickly. And they're like, well, what? The car says you're going around the corner too quickly. And then, you know, the accident I had, I went around a corner too quickly and high-centered my dad's car on a rock.
I went out around a corner too quickly, too. And, yeah, I think that I bent the axle. Not a good scene. So, yeah, I love this. I was hoping that autonomous cars would be around before my children started driving, but that's going to happen in 3 years. My kids will get driver's licenses. I don't think that's going to happen. So I like this. I like the report card aspect. I like it all. It does something with the stereo, too, right? Like you can't turn the stereo turns off if something.
If they don't have the people in the front don't have their seatbelts on, the stereo won't turn on.
Oh, penalty.
Which as a teenager, music and driving go together like nothing else. That's all I did. I would just drive around and listen to music way too loud. That's all I did as a teenager. And, you know, if you can't listen to your music because you don't have your seatbelt on, you're just going to put it on. At the same time, kids have always had their, you know, seatbelts at this point. You know, I remember we didn't have the seatbelt law in California. Didn't pass until I was like 11 or 12. So that reminds you how old I am. I'm like 73.
I'm kind of fascinated by the thought. I've been thinking about this lately, about how technology enables so much monitoring of our kids. As parents, you can do so much in the monitoring side of things, you know, be it the device that they're carrying around here in this case in the car, you know, and, you know, keeping report cards. I wonder what the long-term ramification is for placing our children under this like technological police state. Because I mean, parents have always cared about their children. I'm not saying that we haven't, you know, parents haven't always kind of tried as best as they can with the tools that they have to keep track of their kids in different ways. But now it's like down to a micro level, right? Like now you can literally put a device on them, phone, and track everywhere that they go and know all the things that they do in a car when they're driving around. I wonder what that means for the grown up, you know, that had their childhood living under that microscope. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there's the concern of, you know, the Apple, to bring up the Apple FBI thing, but, you know, being tracked by the government. And if you are used to being tracked by your parents, if you become very comfortable with that, then, you know, and kids are already comfortable with being tracked by their friends, being tracked by advertisers. When authority figures and you feel comfortable with them being, you know, tracking you, then, you know, 10, 20 years, you know, the idea of the government tracking you might not seem that bad.
Right.
Well, right now we find it, you know, appalling.
Absolutely.
I mean, my parents tracked me out, you know, my entire childhood.
Yeah.
So what's the difference?
Yes. And as a parent, of a teenager, and I don't, only one of my three kids has phones, and I don't have Find My Friends, and we've had a conversation about it, and I think it's important. Everybody gets to make their own choice. I'm not going to judge other people that do track their kids. I actually take advantage of the fact that she's usually with friends who are being tracked by their parents, so I can then take advantage of that. But, you know, but you can see where a feature like this is really being sold, like you described it. Like, here is something that you can have a conversation with your children about. You know, it's not going to save you. It's not going to save them. It's not going to make them stop driving 70 miles an hour. It's like, you just have to hope, like the rest of
us,
you know, that you don't get in an accident, as we didn't, and then you can have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
I think if you see your kid doing these sort of things and driving, there's a conversation, and B, you know, there's driving schools, there's weekends where you can go and race around a track. If that's something that your kid enjoys, you know, if your kid likes driving fast, put them on a truck, put them somewhere safe, put them somewhere where they're going to be trained to drive. And they're going to be better drivers because of it, because they're going to realize that this is, you know, the appropriate place to drive quicker. And also, you know, they'll learn defensive driving skills.
Right. So, shifting gears, Lyft and GM are cozy with one another at this point. GM did, after all, invest $500 million in the ride-sharing company a while back, a few months ago. Now the two companies are cozying up once again to offer would-be Lyft drivers a rental option. What is this all about, Roberto?
So Lyft and GM, you know, they have, like you said, the partnership. Lyft was saying there's, you know, over 100,000 people who have signed up to be drivers in these cities, Chicago, Baltimore, D.C., and Boston, that their cars either A, didn't meet the qualifications, or they just don't have a car. So the idea is that they could rent a GM. Right now it's a Chevy Equinox, between 1 week and 6 weeks. And depending on how many trips you take that week with consumers or with, you know, people who need to ride around, Lyft customers, it could be free. If you do over 65 trips in a week, you don't have to pay for the rental, which is kind of nice if you're looking for something where, you know, you want to make a little extra cash, but your car doesn't have four doors or it's a little too old. You want to, like, and you can hit up to 65 people. You know, for some people, I mean, why not? I mean, San Francisco would probably be tougher, but, you know. But right now they're launching it in Chicago later this month, and then the other three cities later on. And for Chevy and Lyft, it's you know, sort of cementing that partnership and getting them working closer together.
Well, doesn't this solve the problem that, I mean, we've heard that, like, Uber drivers who sort of lease their car from Uber, like, they, and now that when they lower the prices or, you know, for us as the consumer, those people aren't even able to pay off those cars. I mean, is this kind of trying to get at that problem?
I think so. I think the idea of leasing your car specifically for Uber or Lyft is tenuous, because Uber, you know, these companies keep lowering their prices. If Uber lowers their price, Lyft's going to lower their price, which, you know, has caused a lot of problems. You know, you have the Uber drivers who have been protesting in San Francisco, you know, last month or the month before. And they're protesting because they used to make a lot more money, and now they're making less money. And when that happens, you know, and you have this car that you're leasing either through Uber or you just bought because Uber was a good deal when you first started, that's tough. But when you have, like, sort of this fixed rate, short-term rental, if, you know, Lyft lowers the price of how much they're paying you, you can just sort of walk away after, you know, it's worked for a month or two, but now, you know, it doesn't make sense for me financially. So I can walk away. I've done my, you know, I have the rental, I can go and get a job somewhere else.
That's interesting. All right, well, more car news and self-driving car news. Bloomberg reports that Ford, Volkswagen, and Toyota have formed a rare partnership in order to advance autonomous car technology by funding artificial intelligence research at Berkeley. What do you make of this, Roberto?
AI is key to autonomous driving. You know, without that, and that's really why autonomous driving has sort of taken off in the last few years with Google, is that the computers are, you know, using GPUs, are powerful enough, almost, and not quite, but they're powerful enough to sort of use that AI to determine, you're like, oh, that's the person, that's a cat, that's a tree, that's another car, this is what's going on, it's raining, it's a little bit windy, I'm in my lane. You know, you got to be able to make all these decisions really quickly. And, you know, partnering with a university means that these companies don't have to, you know, try to figure it out on their own, which is tough because traditionally they've been making cars. And if you remember, you know, the car stereos from the last 5 years, that was like the tip top tech that they had. It wasn't, you know, you could play a CD or maybe an MP3 or plug your iPhone in, and that was pretty much it. And so, you know, it's smart for these automakers to be partnering with a university like Berkeley to get in and get those really big brains to sort of like solve the problems for them. And everyone sort of, you know, Berkeley gets to use their cars, you know, automakers get the tech, and it's sort of, you know, it'll, you know, exponentially it'll just start growing and making, you know, the eventual world of autonomous vehicles happen.
Is this also a story about how fast all this is moving? And it's almost moving too fast for the universities. I mean, Bloomberg said that for Berkeley, it's an opportunity to get funding without having to delay publication at the behest of a sponsor, which I thought was interesting because other parts of this story in Bloomberg kind of draw comparisons to what happened at Carnegie Mellon. And that was like Uber last year, maybe 2 years ago, partnered with Carnegie Mellon and then ended up just sort of poaching all of their academics to work for Uber and to work for them. Is this good for Berkeley and good for research and good for the automotive cars, or does one or the other end up on top in this?
You know, I think it's good for everyone. Even if, you know, Toyota or Ford or whoever like poaches some of those professors, I mean, you're going to have students who are getting into this, who are going to be professors, and you're going to have, you know, everyone is working to make AI, you know, and it's not just for cars, it's for a lot of different things, but everyone's working to make AI a reality. And if you make a competitive environment, people are going to work faster, they're going to work harder, and they're going to try to win. And that's, you know, what the automakers are trying to do right now, teaming up with the universities. And of course, the university wants to be able to say, we're the ones that created the AI that's powering the Toyota Automaton or whatever car, weird name they come up with.
Toyota Automaton.
Automaton.
Automaton. I love it.
Yeah. I do too, actually. That one's free, Toyota.
Okay.
Cool. Excellent stuff. Thank you, Roberto, for those stories here. We actually have an email from Jack, who wrote into tnt@twit.tv with his thoughts on device security. He says, I know I'm fueling the fire with this email, but there is a security feature in iPhones with fingerprint sensors that I think has been overlooked. Hosts and guests alike have mentioned that you can be forced by authorities to unlock your phone if you use the fingerprint sensor. However, this feature is disabled as a security precaution when the iPhone is rebooted. So any iPhone owner who's concerned about unwarranted search can use this feature by powering off their phone in the event they risk their phone being confiscated, let's say. I mean, Android's like this too. And I guess I never really kind of considered why that might be the case. But yeah, that's exactly it, right? Like, I guess that makes perfect sense that you turn it off. I guess the trick here is, of course, if your phone's being confiscated, it might be incredibly inconvenient or impossible for you to actually power it down before anything can happen. But I suppose once you kick off the process, then it happens. I don't know.
The smart person, like say you're a dissident in a country where you're afraid that, you know, if that information gets out, is you turn off the convenience of your fingerprint unlocking your phone.
Yeah,
if you're a dissident or you feel like you're civil rights are going to be violated during some sort of protest or whatever, or, you know, you do that. And of course, if you're, you know, Bob the drug dealer, you would probably do that as well.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that just really is a good example of why this is so complicated, because that's right. What we're dealing with, the both of those arguments.
Yeah.
And I think on this show, on MacBreak Weekly, also Leo was talking yesterday about how you can get around the fingerprint sensor if you have, if you have Siri disabled on the lock screen, so that, you know, a lot of us, we want the convenience. And so, like, I want to be able to talk to Siri without unlocking. And so, you know, if you already have that, if you've already traded, you've already made the trade for convenience, mm-hmm. there are a lot of ways that people can get in, bad guys and good guys alike.
Well, yeah. And I mean, like on Android, for example, there are features like Smart Lock where essentially it will deactivate the requirement for, let's say, a fingerprint or a PIN code if you've told it, you know, this geographic location, like this is work, so don't lock it at work or don't lock it at home. Or you can sync it so that when it's connected to Bluetooth to your watch, it deactivates those security features too. So yes, while that's convenient, that also creates another another way into your device potentially, and not even just in the case of, you know, it being confiscated by the officials or whatever, but by people who happen to want to take your phone and get into it outside of that. So there you go.
Well, up next,
and it turns out all you need is a phishing scam.
Yeah, right.
All you need is an email.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what the FBI should try next. Padre caught up with Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. We'll see them in a moment. But first, let's take a minute to thank Prosper, the sponsor of this episode. Credit card debt is no picnic. Instead of putting everything on your card, you might want to consider getting a loan instead. It doesn't have to be a huge production, and you don't have to worry about the stress of high interest rate credit cards. Next time you need some extra cash for a project, consider going to Prosper.com. Now, if you're still on the fence, just try it. You can get a free quote. It does not affect your credit rating. Prosper's online marketplace connects people who need money with those who want to invest, those who want to invest in you. You are a real person at Prosper, not a number, not a score, not an algorithm. You're you. It's all the beauty and promise of crowdsourcing, but for borrowing money. You can use Prosper to borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days. With Prosper.com, you can borrow money for just about anything you want. You can pay off high-rate credit cards. You can fix up your house, get a new car, start a small business, plan a vacation, anything you want. It's your money. I have considered a loan to fix up my kitchen to make it look like some of the people that we interview, like Becky Worley, from their kitchens. They're beautiful. I'm jealous. I might fix up mine. Prosper.com is the better way to get the cash you need at a low interest rate. To check your low rate instantly without affecting your good credit, go to prosper.com/TNT for up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days. Go to prosper.com/TNT. That's prosper.com/TNT.
All right, so we've talked a bit about some of the news coming out of the Game Developers Conference currently here in the Bay Area. Father Robert Ballester is there today. We have a team there, actually. He had a chance to catch up with Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica to talk about some of Sam's favorite stuff. Let's see what they had to say.
Thanks, Jason and Megan. We're here at the Game Developer Conference 2016. I'm standing next to Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica. Sam, what were the most memorable pieces of tech or games that you've seen at the show?
Well, the HTC Vive has been my favorite for a while. I'm lucky enough to have one at the house, as I've told Megan and everybody else, week in, week out. And that's still really blowing my mind. I actually was just at an Oculus event, and I've been able to do hands-on direct comparisons with the Oculus and HTC Vive. And I feel like developers and fans alike are really going toward the HTC Vive. It's much more difficult to set up in your home, so how that'll actually play out in real world is one thing. But in terms of having these demonstrations and going, what's really cool, Valve and HTC have the edge.
Now let's talk about that edge, because you got to try out the one that everyone's talking about. That's the HTC running Star Wars. What was that like?
That's right. I did go to Tatooine very briefly. It seems to be setting up something to happen between episode 7 and 8, in which you stand on Tatooine. You've been preparing with Luke Skywalker, but all you see when you land is that you stand in a dusty spot. Millennium Falcon lands right on top of you. R2 comes out, and you need to keep R2 safe from a whole bunch of stormtroopers by taking your Vive controller. It turns into a lightsaber. It is the first ever motion-tracked VR lightsaber, which is amazing to say that it's taken this long for that to happen. Even the Wii didn't have a very good lightsaber thing. All you do is you swipe away laser shots, so it's not quite a battle. Nobody knows if this is going to come out as a full game, but what I did play, it makes me think this is going to be something, and it was very cool.
That's actually been a trend here. You've been seeing more and more less technical achievement, less hardware announcement, more actually get in and try something that's interesting. But I think we buried the lead, because there was a story that really came out yesterday. I know you went to the press event. The Twit team actually got to go to the Sony booth and try the new PlayStation VR. We really liked it, especially at that price point. We thought it's definitely in the upper echelon of VR products. Where would you place it?
So I think PlayStation VR is the most likely to make immediate, short-term, at-the-house gaming VR impact. The combination of price point and quality, it is not the sharpest VR display, but it will not make you sick. It runs fast enough. It has actual games, including Res VR, which is a remake of an older game, which was ahead of its time at the time. It's going to really kill when it finally launches. And there's going to be enough playable stuff at a price point. If you've already spent that $350 on the PlayStation, you're halfway there. You don't have to buy that $1,000 computer like you do with the Vive, Oculus, and other systems. So I honestly think this is going to be right at that sweet spot where people, on average, will go, I can throw an additional $400 at this. I can get this going. I can put VR in my home that doesn't suck right now. The Vive, I love it. I have a little bit of money to throw at it. But for people who just want to try it and have it not suck, have it not just be the Samsung Gear VR quick taste, this is going to be a big sea changer, and they're really poised to make a big impact with it.
Sam, one last question. We know that VR has been the big story. Everyone has a VR headset or a VR accessory, or they're developing an infrastructure for VR or even AR, like Google with their Project Tango. But when we look at actual games, is there one that has stood out in your time at GDC that you say that's well-designed or well-programmed, or the story is great, or it's just simple enough to grab me?
I think there. I would have to stay here for so long to answer that question. I think HTC Vive, Steam and Valve, I'm sorry, Valve has worked very hard with the HTC Vive team and with indie developers to give them tools to make a wide range of interesting experiences, from quick hit arcadey stuff to full-fledged adventures. I would say Budget Cuts feels like a real game. I'd say Tilt Brush feels like a real tool which you can paint and draw with. Those are the two at the very top of my list. I would just shiv those two to anybody. Selfie Tennis is where you play a game of tennis against yourself. It's a very quick hit, very simple thing, but I've stayed with it. There's a mix. There is enough stuff between quick hit, long adventure, stay in it a long time, stay in it really quickly. I think that there's going to be a range of stuff for both solitary VR and group VR. I think that's going to be the conversation going forward as more people get out of these conventions and into their homes.
That's a story from GDC 2016. Now, Sam, of course, everyone knows Ars Technica, but if they want to find your work in particular, where can they go?
They can find my... I was about to make a dumb joke. At Sam Red is the easiest way on Twitter, but I'm pretty much living and breathing Ars Technica. I have to go run and play with another headset thing, is that, and then go play all these amazing indie games. It's not just VR. There's amazing stuff being made for every kind of screen and even board game stuff. So I'm going to go play all of it and go crazy. I really appreciate getting to talk to you guys.
It's a pleasure, Sam. And Jason, Megan... back to you in the studio.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Father Robert. Thank you, Sam Moscovich. Man, I really want to play that Star Wars VR game. Like, that's... Oh.
It's Star Wars. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be like a Star Wars like chess game. You're like, you know what? I really want to play that chess game, even though you play chess a million times.
Actually,
like, well, that makes Wookiees.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. If they recreate that scene from A New Hope and mm-hmm. and everything, I would totally play that. I play that all the time. I'd never come out of VR if that was reality.
So, Roberto, I know last month you wrote a piece about how VR is getting like a little bit too real with Grand Theft Auto. Do you have any other thoughts on VR?
You know, I want to see what happens with it beyond games. The only game I really like is Portal. And so when the Portal comes out and my friend has the game and has the headset, I'm going to go to their house. I'm not going to buy this. I'm not going to buy, you know, any of this stuff because I'm cheap and I just don't play games. But what happens after that? What happens beyond games? And that's where I'm really interested. And, you know, we've seen a few little things that, you know, New York Times had a really, you know, New York Times VR is pretty nice. But you know, I keep seeing people sort of ham-fisting video into VR where, you know, there's a subject that you're talking to and then there's like maybe a few things going on in the background. But for the most part, you know, it's not really, you know, they did a lot of work for something that could have been accomplished with, you know, just a regular video. So, you know, it's going to take a little bit and it's going to, you know, people are going to have to start thinking about how they create you know, their videos or whatever they want to do with VR. But once that happens, it'll be interesting. But I at the same time, I don't like sweaty things on my face. Like I don't want to be like this for like 3 hours and then it's just like sweat and gross. And
yeah, that right? is true.
It's got to be good enough to forget that you're sweating on your face, I guess.
So good you don't mind the sweat pouring from your face.
Yeah.
Now I don't know if I'm so stoked on VR.
Yeah. That's why I don't wear VR at conventions like CES or whatever. Like, hey, try our VR. I'm like, no, I don't want the sweat of 1,000 other people on my face. I'm weird.
At least when you go and get like a chair massage, like they put a new thing on the thing that you rest your face on. But yeah, you're right. At conventions, no, it's
sweat take of this 1,000 mask faces.
Sweat of 1,000.
Man, we have million titles. Don't forget, TWiT is doing the special coverage for you guys at GDC, and you can find our coverage with Father Robert Ballesterre and Chad Johnson at our specials page once it is published, I think tonight or tomorrow morning. TWiT.tv/specials. Check it out.
TNT's fan of the day is Michael Rosner, who posted to the TNT Facebook page at facebook.com/technewstoday. With this picture saying, my dog Drupal and myself are watching Tech News Today. Drupal, awesome dog name. Awesome dog.
I love that name. Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, and if you need another reason to watch the video version of today's show, we also have a better picture of Drupal, a Cocker Spaniel. we're very fond of seeing pictures of pets watching our show. We really like it. So show us how you or your pet watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. And if your pet doesn't like being posted on social media but does like appearing on our show, you can email the image directly to me, Megan@twit.tv. I do like dogs more than cats, but I like seeing pictures of your cats, Roberto. Do your cats enjoy watching this show?
Oh yeah, they're not all the time. They're not hassling me for food or just, you know, or sitting in my lap and just, you know, you're not going anywhere. Yeah. We're going to hang out here for about 2 hours. I hope you enjoy yourself. I hope you have the remote within reach.
All right. Well, you might regret that drunken tweet that you posted, or you might pat yourself on the back because you have offered up your stupidity for science. I will explain what that means in a second. But first, let's take a minute to thank Wealthfront, the sponsor of this episode. You invest for the long term for you or your family's financial health, but trying to do it yourself, especially the right way, is so far down on my to-do list that it never gets done. That's what Wealthfront is for. Traditional advisors charge huge fees between 1% and 3% of what they manage. With Wealthfront, you pay 0.25% a year. That's 25 basis points, zero commissions, and no hidden fees. That's less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 account. There are no additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. You can get started investing today with as little as $500. Now, if you've ever looked at your credit card statement and been a little appalled at all the little things you throw your money at every month, you'll want to check out Wealthfront. It is not as hard as you think to invest that money instead of spending it on gems in Clash of Clans. Or if you really want Clash of Clans gems, invest your real money now so you can buy more Clash of Clans gems later. I don't judge if you want to buy gems, buy gems. It only takes a few minutes to sign up at Wealthfront.com, and it goes right to work monitoring your portfolios around the clock and taking action as soon as an opportunity arises. Wealthfront portfolios are based on modern portfolio theory, and they're designed to adjust according to your personal risk tolerance while staying diversified and tax efficient. Wealthfront is transparent and accessible. You can view all your accounts in one place, whether they're personal, joint, or retirement. You can also see every trade that Wealthfront makes on your behalf in your dashboard, on your desktop, or with their mobile app. Unlike other financial advisors, Wealthfront won't bog you down with dozens of questions. They're simplified, their risk identification process, which allows you to begin investing sooner. Did you know that more than 90% of portfolios aren't invested the right way for the long term? With Wealthfront's new portfolio review, you can see if your portfolio is at risk, how diversified your investments are, and what you're losing to fees. You can even minimize your taxes, all for free. Wealthfront manages over $2.6 billion in client assets, and it's growing rapidly every day. Visit Wealthfront.com/TNT to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for TWiT listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge, and that's for life. Join the many TWiT fans who have seen huge success with Wealthfront and claim your offer today at Wealthfront.com/TNT. And finally, tonight, we have already talked about the trials and tribulations of university research. You know where it's a lot easier to do research? Twitter. The MIT Technology Review says scientists at the University of Rochester have used a machine learning algorithm to study tweeting while drinking in order to reveal a pattern of alcohol-related behavior in unprecedented detail. Discuss amongst yourself.
Awkward.
So, go ahead.
I don't actually drink, but it seems like when I go back on my Twitter feed, it seems like I'm drunk. It seems like I'm just like, ah, rah.
That's a good point. So, yeah, I were, that actually surprises me because I follow you on Twitter. So it's good to know that those aren't drunk tweets. That's just you. But they did.
Surprise is the best.
Yeah. I think they used I think they searched for words like drinking or drunk or, you know, I'm
obvious
drunk.
Ones, yeah. that's a good indication. Yeah. When your tweet says, I'm really drunk right now. They're probably drunk.
Right. So I think that the machine learning is smarter than me. You know, my own brain thought you were drunk when you were tweeting. But in actuality, that's why AR is better. And, you know, it's done some studies. It can tell location. I guess it can just, you know, talk about the darker side of drinking, which, of course, there is a darker side there, too. And maybe be able to help people.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what robot narcs are going to do with all this extra information. What you're going to do, robot narc?
The worst.
Well, we have snitches. We've talked so much about, you know, our own privacy, but then we're all on Twitter, tweeting all kinds of information all the time. And, you know, it's not just people reading it, but it's, you know, people can take machines and really, you know, take that data and learn things about it.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the bigger, you know, thing to maybe take away from this particular example is that we put a lot of information out there, and all it takes is just a certain, you know, kind of focus in analysis, and you can actually learn a lot about someone based on some random thing that you did that you missed a punctuation, and oh, hey, you're likely to miss a punctuation, you know, mark, because you're drunk. Oh, so you were drunk. You know, like inferences can be made around things that seem so meaningless. So, you know, that's important to know, I suppose. Robot narcs, they're coming after you.
Robot drunkards. That's why I only tweet lies. I just tweet lies nonstop. Everything I think on Twitter is a lie. Because the robot narcs aren't going to come after me. They're not going to get me.
They're going to think something of you, which isn't true.
They're just like, oh, this guy likes cats. He talks about cats a lot.
Well, you know, they also talk about how it is a way to do research. I mean, research is expensive. Like, you know, paying people to come in and be research subjects is expensive. But you can learn a lot from what people tweet. And, yeah, not all good things.
It'll be interesting to see how they, you know, in geographic areas, like, you know, it's well, tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day. So tomorrow the machine's just going to explode. It's just like just red hot, like in the server room. Just like, no, I can't handle it.
It's going to get so smart tomorrow.
But outside that, like, you know, sort of looking at geographic areas and seeing how people, you know, do they drink more after something, you know, something civic happens, that's great. Like, you know, your local sports team wins, or do people drink more when they lose? You know, that's, you know, I wonder if that's
right.
Possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, robots. Roberto, it is always a pleasure to have you on. We talked about some of the stories that you have been covering, a lot of cars and other wheeled objects, and apparently you have some more that you can't talk about yet, but we look forward to reading those.
But all the cars.
Yeah. Things with wheels. Roberto is a reporter at Engadget, and your Twitter is at Strange Ways. That's Strange Ways, no vowels.
Strange Ways, no vowels. Mm-hmm. Strngwys.
Or Smiths. Or string waves. Or string waves.
String waves, yeah. Okay. It's a Smiths reference. So Smiths fans, you'll get it.
Awesome.
Or strong waves. I will stop now.
Thanks so much for coming on, Roberto.
Thank you, Roberto.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Always a pleasure. We'll have you back soon. Tomorrow's guest will be Tim Stevens, returning to the show from CNET. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail. You probably won't, but if you want to, it's 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also hit us up on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
This is the point of the show where I like to thank everyone who's still listening for listening all the way through. And you might say, oh, well, I just listened for an hour. I don't have an hour. But you probably do. You don't know where you have an hour. Driving, folding, laundry, running, exercising. Lots of ways you can listen and watch. Yeah, watch with your Google Cardboard. Whatever way you watch, you're going to want to subscribe so you get the show as soon as possible. That's twit.tv/TNT. And sign up for our newsletter, twit.tv/newsletter. I am on Twitter at Megan Maroney, usually not drunk tweeting.
I don't know if I ever drunk tweet anymore. I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Anthony Nielsen, and all the folks here who help us produce this show every single weekday. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We will see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.
Drunk tweet.